理课堂听 class.com。
高等学校英语专业八级考试指南，由上海外语音像出版社录制出版。第二课，
In sections B and C, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Mark the correct answer to each question on your answer sheet. Section B, Interview. Questions 1 to 5 are based on an interview. At the end of the interview, you will be given 10 seconds to answer each of the following questions. Now, listen to the interview.
First of all, when do people start work in American offices?
Right. Well, the official workday starts at 9 a.m. This should really mean 9 o'clock, not 10 past or half past 9.
Would you say that people work very hard in offices in America?
Well, I don't know about employees in your country, but some nations have a philosophy that you work when the boss is around,And any time he's not there, one can relax by reading the newspaper or whatever one likes doing in a personal way.
And things are different in the States, you're saying?
Well, in America, one is being paid for one's time. So employees are expected to find other work if their own desks are clear, or to help someone else with his or her work. But you never sit idle doing nothing.
Yes, as the saying goes, time is money.
Exactly.Your employer owns your time while he is paying you for it. That is precisely what time is money means. And anyway, the boss doesn't ask more of you than he is doing himself. He will probably work through the lunch hour himself and even take work home at night.
Talking about lunch hours, what about them? Do you have to take them seriously?
Oh, yes, sure, of course. An employee's lunch hour should be taken within the period allowed.Unless you are officially discussing company business, say, on a business lunch. It's the same, too, with the end of the day. I mean, work until the day officially ends at 5 o'clock, unless you are in an office where flexi time is the accepted practice.
Oh, so you have the flexi time system, do you? I wasn't sure about that.
Oh, yes, sure.Flexible working hours, that is, starting or ending work earlier or later, I know it's still relatively new. However, there are more and more Americans on the system today. Well, for the same reasons as in Europe, to keep traffic and commuting problems down. And as more women now work, it gives more family time.
Could you say something about contracts of hiring in America, please?
Well, it's different in America from, say, European countries like Germany or France, perhaps Japan too, I'm not sure. I know that in some countries, people relax when they have once got a job, because they know that they will almost never be fired unless they do something wrong.
You mean that your employer can just fire you in America?
No. There are, of course, legal protections in the US, so employees cannot be unjustly fired without good reason.Workers must do a good job, produce well, and get along with their colleagues, or they can be let go, as it's called.
From one day to the next, you mean?
Well, it's rarely done without warning, but it is important to remember that in the US you're a member of a business firm and not a family. It makes a difference.
I wonder, is the physical or external appearance of office life different from European offices?
Well, I have heard people comment on the informality found in American offices, and this is certainly a little difficult for people who are more used to a hierarchical system, of course. But there are some very formal offices. To, say, in big banks, law firms, and major corporations. But in many establishments with fewer employees, the atmosphere is loose and easy, with a lot of joking and teasing, and wandering in and out of offices among all levels of employees.
Well, that sounds quite interesting. I think that's all I want to know, really. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Section C, News Broadcast. Question 6 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you'll be given 10 seconds to answer the question. Now listen to the news.
President Clinton begins a 3-day campaign-style trip to the western U.S. later today to highlight his domestic agenda. White House spokesman says crime, the most important issue for Americans this election year, according to public opinion polls, will be a key theme of President Clinton's trips to California, Nevada, and New Mexico. Mr. Clinton's presumptive Republican challenger, retiring Senator Bob Dole, has repeatedly disapproved of Mr. Clinton's record on fighting crime. The president is expected to argue that his policies have helped to make American communities safer places. Mr. Clinton will also attend a number of political fundraising events during his visits to California and Nevada.
Questions 7 and 8 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the news.
Reports say Japan and the US have reached an agreement on their dispute over air cargo transport rights in Asia. The agreement will mean that Washington and Tokyo will renegotiate a 1952 aviation treaty which allowed American airlines to fly on from Tokyo to other places in Asia, but didn't allow Japanese airlines the same rights to fly on from America to other destinations. Tokyo has always said that the treaty was unfair, and Japan has always wanted it changed. According to the agreement, Japan will allow the American airline carrier Federal Express to fly on through Tokyo to 7 other destinations in Asia. Now, Japan has always said it was happy to allow that if the treaty was renegotiated. It does seem very clear that Japan has come out of this one on top. This is certainly not the first dispute, and it certainly won't be the last dispute either. There are several outstanding areas of friction between Japan and the US. At the moment, they are negotiating about photographic film and photographic paper. It could take a year to resolve. But even where the two countries do reach agreement, there is still room for argument. They reached this famous car agreement about a month ago. They are already bickering about it.
Questions 9 and 10 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the news. Scientists say they can tell what air and sea conditions were like hundreds of thousands of years ago. They say pieces of ice taken from Greenland provide such information. Scientists took the ice from more than 1.5 mile deep in huge masses of ice that float on the sea. That is the deepest scientists ever have drilled for ice. The ice represents 25,000 years of history. It provides one of the clearest records of ancient weather. European and American scientific teams have been studying ice from the same area to confirm each other's findings. The scientists examine the ice that was formed each year. They measure the oxygen and carbon dioxide in the ice. These measurements tell about the year's temperature. From these measurements, the scientific team says that the past 10,000 years is the only period during which the weather has not changed very much. Before that time, they believe very large, sudden changes in the weather were common. The ice appears to show that at some periods, Earth's weather changed from very hot to very cold in only 10 years. This is the end of listening comprehension. Please proceed to the next part. Sample Test 5, Part 1, Listening Comprehension, Section A, Mini Lecture. In this section you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the lecture once only. While listening, take notes on the important points. Your notes will not be marked, but you will need them to complete a gap-filling task on Answer Sheet 1 after the mini lecture. Use the blank sheet for note-taking. Now, listen to the mini-lecture.
Good morning. Today's lecture will focus on how to make people feel at ease in conversations. I guess all of you sitting here can recall certain people who just seem to make you feel comfortable when they're around. You spend an hour with them and feel as if you've known them half your life. These people who have that certain something that make us feel comfortable have something in common. And once we know what that is, we can go about getting some of that something for ourselves. How is it done? Here are some of the skills that good talkers have. If you follow the skills, they will help you put people at their ease, make them feel secure and comfortable, and turn acquaintances into friends. First of all, good talkers ask questions. Almost anyone, no matter how shy, will answer a question. In fact, according to my observation, very shy persons are often more willing to answer questions than extroverts. They are more concerned that someone will think them impolite if they don't respond to the questions. So, most skillful conversationalists recommend starting with a question that is personal but not harmful. For example, once a famous American TV presenter got a long and fascinating interview from a notoriously private billionaire by asking him about his first job. Another example, one prominent woman executive confesses that, at business lunches, I always ask people what they did that morning. It's a dull question, but it gets things going. From there, you can move on to other matters, sometimes to really personal questions. Moreover, how your respondent answers will let you know how far you can go. A few simple catchwords like, really? Yes? Are clear invitations to continue talking. Second, once good talkers have asked questions, they listen for answers. This point seems obvious, but it isn't in fact. Making people feel comfortable isn't simply a matter of making idle conversation. Your questions have a point. You're really asking, what sort of person are you? And to find out, you have to really listen. There are at least three components of real listening. For one thing, real listening means not changing the subject. If someone sticks to one topic, you can assume that he or she is really interested in it. Another component of real listening is listening not just to words but to tones of voice. I once mentioned D.H. Lawrence to a friend. To my astonishment, she launched into an academic discussion of the imagery in Lawrence's works. Midway through, I listened to her voice. It was, to put it mildly, unanimated, and it seemed obvious that the imagery monologue was intended solely for my benefit. And I quickly changed the subject. And last, real listening means using your eyes as well as your ears. When your gaze wanders, it makes people think they're boring you, or what they are saying is not interesting. Of course, you don't have to stare or glare at them. Simply looking attentive will make most people think that you think they're fascinating. Next, good talkers are not afraid to laugh. If you think of all the people you know who make you feel comfortable, you may notice that all of them laugh a lot. Laughter is not only warming and friendly, it is also a good way to ease other people's discomfort. I have a friend whom I enjoy watching at gatherings of people who do not know each other well. The first few minutes of talk are a bit uneasy and hesitant, for the people involved do not yet have a sense of each other. Invariably, a light comment or joke is made, and my friend's easy laughter appears like sunshine in the conversation. There is always then a visible softening that takes place. Other people smile and loosen in response to her laughter, and the conversation goes on with more warmth and ease. Finally, good talkers are ones who cement a parting, that is, they know how to make use of a parting as a way to leave a deep impression on others. Last impressions are just as important as first impressions in determining how a new acquaintance will remember you. People who make others feel really comfortable take advantage of that parting moment to close the deal. Men have had it easier. They have done it with a smile and a good, firm handshake. What about women then? Over the last several years, women have started to take over that custom as well, between themselves or with men. If you're saying goodbye, you may want to give him or her a second extra hand squeeze. It's a way to say, "I've really enjoyed meeting you." But it's not all done with body language. If you've enjoyed being with someone, if you want to see that person again, don't keep it a secret. Let people know how you feel, and they may walk away feeling as if they've known you half their life. Okay, just to sum up. Today we've talked about four ways to make people feel at ease in conversations. These skills are important in keeping conversations going and in forming friendships later on. Of course, these skills are by no means the only ones we can use. The list is much longer. I hope you will use these four skills and discover more on your own in conversations with other people.
Now you have 2 minutes to check your notes and then complete the gap-filling task on answer sheet 1 in 10 minutes. In sections B and C, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Mark the correct answer to each question on your answer sheet. Section B, conversation. Questions 1 to 5 are based on a conversation. At the end of the conversation, you will be given 10 seconds to answer each of the following questions. Now listen to the conversation.
I'm longing to hear about this tour, Victoria. You must be terribly excited.
Oh, I am. I've never been to America before, Jenny, so I'm really looking forward to it. I thought of going fly drive.
Fly drive?
Yes. You know, you can arrange for a car to be waiting for you at the airport when you arrive. You book everything this end, including the plane tickets.
Sounds simple enough. Are you going to, then?
Well, I'm a bit worried about driving on the other side of the road and having to, so I decided it would be better to go on a more organized holiday.
What do you mean by organized?
Well, everything is arranged by a tour operator, a more organized trip.
What do you mean by organized?
Well, everything is arranged by a tour operator. You know, you are taken around and shown where to go and what to do. I would probably miss half the sights otherwise.
Hmm. Where are you going anyway?
Orlando. It's in central Florida.
Sounds okay. Are you going on your own?
Yes, I don't mind that. There will be other people on the tour. I'm sure to make friends. You know, I like meeting new people. Here, let me show you the brochure.
It looks pretty packed. Do you really have time to do all these things?
Oh, yes, it's all planned. Let's see. Day one, we arrive in Orlando, and after we've settled in our hotel, we have the afternoon free. I guess we could have a look around and do what we like. Then, day two, we go to Disney World.
You mean Mickey Mouse and all that?
Yes. It's a kind of gigantic fun fair with all the Disney characters. And there is also the Epcot Center. A sort of city of the future with all the latest developments. I've always wanted to go there, anything I saw on television. And then, day three, we go to SeaWorld.
Whatever is that?
Well, there are aquatic displays and performing dolphins and even a whale.
Oh, that's quite unusual. Let's see what you do on day four. Oh, it seems to be free.
Yes, that's right. And then, on the next day, we go to the Kennedy Space Center. That should be interesting.
I wonder how much they let you see. That's where NASA is, isn't it?
Well, I shouldn't think you'd be able to see the latest spacecraft, but you might be allowed to glimpse some mission control, and perhaps how they receive messages from satellites. Anyway, I bet you'll know a lot more about space than you even know before.
I quite envy you going there. Somehow, I find it quite hard to believe that people will one day live out in space.
Oh, I don't. I'll give it a try if I have the chance. Now, what next? Oh, yes, day six, Circus World.
Circus World? That sounds fun. I love going to the circus.
So do I. It states here, Circus World, see, take parts, enjoy. I wonder what take part involves.
You'll soon find out.
And day seven, we come home. Just as well, I'll be broke by then.
I suppose you've been saving up for ages for this holiday.
Well, I did think of putting in some extra hours at work, but the money wasn't really worth it after tax, and it would have meant I didn't get home until late. Dad offered to lend me some money, but I know he really needs it himself. In the end, I went to see my bank manager. He was terribly nice, so here I am, all booked up and ready to go.
Section C, News Broadcast. Questions 6 and 7 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the two questions. Now listen to the news.
The Thorpe facility in northwest England would reprocess spent nuclear fuel and its 10 years of operation could produce 60 tons of plutonium.
Expertise would be needed to convert the plutonium into weapon-grade material. And that's in any case the International Atomic Energy Agency would ensure that none went astray. But there is great opposition in the United States to further production of plutonium, even for civilian uses. The Defense Department opposed the export of spent fuel to reprocessing plants in France, saying this would be an extremely damaging signal at a time when the United States wanted to reduce the risk of nuclear proliferation. An independent report for the Pentagon says more plutonium would be produced from civilian programs such as Thorpe than from the dismantling of nuclear weapons.
Questions 8 to 10 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 30 seconds to answer the three questions. Now listen to the news.
Indonesia is not the only country in Asia growing faster than it can find the fuel to keep its industrial engines at full throttle. Japan and South Korea long have been oil importers, as none has any meaningful domestic production to speak of. And despite promising signs that India will triple its oil production by 2015, domestic demand and imports during the same period are likely to more than double, ensuring that the country remains an oil importer. Asia is already the world's second largest oil consumer. The region drinks up to 16.6 million barrels per day, compared with 16.9 million barrels in North America. And if the current trends continue, Asia will overtake North America as the world's largest oil consumer, possibly within 5 years. And as economic growth in these countries speeds ahead, the gap between supply and demand will only grow wider. Asia now accounts for about 25% of the world's oil demand, but just 10% of its supply. That leaves the question of price rises, which could have an impact on the region's economic expansion. Asia is the most vulnerable of all regions to higher oil prices. Indeed, in April alone, prices for widely traded grades of crude increased 10 to 15% at a time of increased market volatility. The continuing embargo against Iraqi exports means that prices are likely to continue fluctuating widely for at least the next few months.
This is the end of listening comprehension. Please proceed to the next part. Sample Test 6, Part 1, Listening Comprehension. Section A, Mini Lecture. In this section you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the lecture once only. While listening, take notes on the important points. Your notes will not be marked, but you will need them to complete a gap-filling task on Answer Sheet 1 after the mini lecture. Use the blank sheet for note-taking. Now, listen to the mini-lecture. The cinema. In today's lecture, we are going to look at some of the important stages in the development of films. The first movie pictures were developed in 1890s by W.K.L. Dixon, an Englishman working in the USA. He called his system the kaleidoscope. It wasn't the cinema we know now at all. The pictures were very small, and only one person at a time could watch. The earliest kaleidoscope used sound separately recorded on a phonograph, an ancestor of gramophone and record player. But there were a lot of problems involved in getting the pictures and sound together, that is, synchronized. As a result, the kaleidoscope was popularized in its silent form. The same principle was developed by the Frenchman called cinematographe, and between 1895 and 1900, they succeeded in exporting it to other parts of Europe, to India, Australia, and Japan. The cinematographe used a large screen, but the film was shown very short, only about a minute long. Like the popularized kaleidoscope, it was a silent system. The early films were made with fixed cameras. This greatly limited what could be achieved. So, an important advance was to use a moving camera which could turn from side to side and also move about to follow the action. The film The Great Train Robbery was the first important experiment in the use of moving cameras. It was made in 1903 by an American and lasted 8 minutes. In the following years, films became much longer and screens got larger. Other refinements were introduced too, but it was not until the early 20s that an effective sound system was developed. Lee de Forest, another American, found ways to photograph sound waves which accompanied the action. This solved the major problem of sound picture synchronization. Although the first company to make talkies rather than silent movies used the system quite different from Forrest's, it was his system that created the general norm. An odd consequence of having sound was that for a few years the camera once again had to be fixed. This was because there were sounds proved to reduce the noise of the mechanism, and the soundproofing was so bulky that they could not easily move about. Once again, for a time, the cinema looked like the theatre. The last radical change in cinema was the development of colour. Colour for photography had been possible from the 1860s, but early films were normally black and white, and any colour was painted on by hand, and this was an expensive, slow, and not very effective technique. In 1922, the first real colour film was produced, using a two-colour system called Technicolour. It was quite common at that time people filmed whole sequences in one colour, and the attempts to mix colours to get realistic effects were not very successful. In 1932, Technicolor was improved by the use of three main colors, and the same system is still used today. Color took longer to be generally accepted than sound. It was expensive, and people often felt odd that it was less realistic than black and white. This was partly, of course, because the quality was not always very high, so the scenes could look peculiar. Since the 1930s, there have been many improvements in the techniques of cinema, and the style of acting has changed a good deal. But after 50 years, the basics, moving pictures, colour and sound, are still the same. Now you have 2 minutes to check your notes, and then complete the gap-filling task on answer sheet 1 in 10 minutes.